This is a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast.
Hey, you're listening to the Bite Size Business Breakfast with Richard Dean and Brandy Scott. A 750 million dirham episode, because that's how much the penthouse mansion in the new apartment building, the tower that the guys at Bengatti are building. We've been speaking to Mohammed Bengatti about that incredible number and what they are actually developing. We've also been looking at the incredible rise of NVIDIA. The chip people, finding out why. We've been talking Beachonomics with Tamer Khan, who's head of research at CBRE, on the news that Dubai is to increase its beachfront by about 400%. We're going to find out, can you put a number on that, a benefit to the economy? And we've been looking at the new report out from the IEA, which says that investment in renewable energy and clean energy is growing faster than that in traditional energy.
Looking at some of our big stories this morning, and the one that's grabbed everyone's attention is our interview with Mohammed Bengatti. He is the CEO of Bengatti, a major holding company and real estate developer here in Dubai, and they've got a new tower in Dubai. So we asked him to come in to talk about it. It's a joint venture with Bugatti. And people like real estate, so we thought, well, we get a lot of experts in, like Tamer, but let's get a developer. And then you asked him, how much is the most expensive apartment, Brandy?
Yeah, and he just said a really large number, didn't he?
This is what he told us.
The Sky Mansion, the one on top, that's being priced at 750 million dirhams. You get spectacular real estate. And, you know, I think it's worth reminding here of Ettore's other motto, which is nothing is too good, nothing is too expensive. We have many inquiries. You know, our lines haven't stopped ringing ever since we've gone live with the project. And the idea is, you know, the rationale behind the project, the design philosophy, it's very much in par with Bugatti's brand DNA. Each and every unit in this project is a mansion, so there are no apartments.
It's one of those what we call meerkat moments, isn't it, on the Business Breakfast?
Oh, yeah. So a meerkat moment, for those who haven't heard us explain it before, is when everybody in the room, regardless of whether you're Richard, Brandy or Tom, Serena, doing the interview or not doing the interview, sticks their head up like a meerkat and we all see each other do it. And then we think, yeah, okay, that was news.
What just happened? We played that soundbite out. Serena Kelly's in the studio. You had a meerkat
moment. I did. You go, what?
You were born and raised here, weren't you? Yeah. 750 million.
I'm sorry. Literally, you could tell I'm speechless. Like,
so we said to him, Mohammed, what do you get for that? You don't get a car. I'm a little bit disappointed.
Or the very flash watch he was wearing, which is a collab with Bugatti, the car company. And we're not promoting this just to be very, very clear.
I don't think anyone is going to come after us because six people have bought 750 million dirham apartments.
No.
If so, I'd like commission. Thank you very much.
We'd love to, but it's not happening. But that's where the market is. And, you know, we've spoken to various experts, people like John Lyons at SBAS, and they will tell us that actually, yeah, Bengatti made their name in real estate with affordable stuff. And I mentioned this before, you know, you drive past Silicon Oasis, their buildings, they're the white and orange ones. They do stand out a bit, but they're just affordable, good value housing, you know, 50, 70,000 dirhams for an apartment or whatever, it's to rent one.
And amongst the astonishing things about this property is that, given our conversation about beachfront this morning, it's not on the beach.
It's not. It's in Business Bay.
Which has its charms.
Yes. But also has its
traffic,
logistical challenges. But, you know, the Zaha Hadid building there, I forget what his exact name is, the one with the hole in the middle, I mean, that's been very popular as well.
It's an eye-watering amount of money. And Mohammed said to us, and you'll hear the full interview with Mam a little bit later, he said, the phone is ringing, we've got inquiries.
And I don't think that's just marketing spin. The number of high-net-worth individuals here, it's that level of the market that's booming, isn't it? And who was it spoke to us yesterday? We speak to a lot of real estate experts. You know, affordable apartments in Discovery Gardens and International City are not booming. It's that level where there's too much demand and not enough supply.
Get an elevator that will take your car up so you can have it in your living room.
You fancy that, Serena Kelly?
No, I've got like two very large dogs, two kids. I've got my mum. I mean, it's just, oh, my husband as well, of course.
There
Sorry.
Are seven bedrooms.
Yeah. Well, I just, yeah. I don't, what, yeah. School run? School
are,
run much?
Are pets allowed?
Oh, yeah. There's a question
Didn't
for
ask
you.
Him that. Rookie error. Okay, let's
body corporate rules. Yeah, yeah. No laundry on the balcony.
Can't put down the deposit because you won't take my dogs.
Brandy asked him, what do you get for... Because it's 44,000 square feet. It's a big place. What do you get? You get a place for your bodyguards to stay. It's like, okay, this is just a different level of wealth. But it is here in Dubai at the moment.
What makes a room suitable for a bodyguard as opposed to anybody else? It's extra long?
It's an armoury, basically, isn't it? You get an armoury. I don't know.
It's got pull-up bars.
Other business stories we're looking at today. Let's talk about chips, because Nvidia has gone nuts, hasn't it? This is the chip maker that none of us, we'd heard of it 48 hours ago, but we didn't really pay any attention to it.
We could pretend to know more about it, but I've pronounced it two different ways in this broadcast, so I'm not going to.
Three.
Yeah.
You described it as Nvidia, Navida, and Chipmunk.
I have indeed called it a chipmunk.
But it's not. It's a $939 billion company today. The shares jumped 24% yesterday. Very simply, because we've got to go to Serena soon, but why is NVIDIA, this microchip maker, suddenly flavour of the month?
AI.
Is that it?
It's the AI wave. They make the sort of chips that you need if you're going to be running servers and the rest of them that are powering generative AI.
This is the boss, Jensen Huang. Again, I'm not going to lie. Never heard of him. He is today number 37 on the Bloomberg list of billionaires with a fortune of $34 billion. The guys at CNBC asked him the very simple question, what is NVIDIA? What do you do? This is what he said.
We can make what is barely possible possible, or we can make something that is very energy consuming, very energy efficient, or we could turn something that costs a lot of money and make it much more affordable. And so we created this thing called accelerated computing. And that was what we pioneered about three decades ago. And it's taken until now to really take off.
Is he just basically saying fast?
Fast and cheap.
Mm.
Jensen, if you're looking for an apartment in Dubai, we know a man who can help you. But join the queue.
This is the Bite Size Business Breakfast, exclusively on DubaiEye1038.com.
Talking real estate now. Pleasure to welcome into the studio a friend of the Business Breakfast, the CEO, Chief Executive Officer of Binghatti Holding, Mohammed Binghatti. Mohammed, good morning. Thanks for being with us.
Good morning, Richard. Pleasure's mine.
We've asked you to join us in the studio because we're getting so many questions about the real estate market. And we speak to a lot of brokers and researchers and analysts, and they're great. Tamer Khan from CBRE is going to be in that chair in about half an hour's time. But it's nice to speak to a developer, someone who's got some skin in the game as well. So thank you for coming in.
Thank you for having me.
So this week, big week for you. You unveiled another development for Binghatti. But this was perhaps on a different scale. It's a collaboration with Bugatti, the luxury car maker. You're going to develop a luxury tower in Business Bay / downtown area of Dubai. And it's not aimed at wealthy people or even high net worth individuals. It's aimed at ultra high net worth individuals. Talk us through the rationale.
So the rationale of the project, Richard, was to echo the motto of Bugatti's founder, Ettore Bugatti. And his motto was, if comparable, it's no longer Bugatti. And this was sort of the central notion that the entire project reverberated. The idea was to create this incomparable experience in the heart of Dubai. And that's where the project slogan comes from, you know, l'art de vivre, in the heart of the metropolis. So that translates to the art of living in the heart of the metropolis. And this idea of creating an incomparable experience that's inspired from the French Riviera, and bringing this heritage, exotic heritage from the French Riviera and planting it in the heart of Dubai. So this was, you know, the central notion that the project sort of elucidated or depicted.
Okay, so it's a striking building. There are no sharp edges on it. I was looking at Design, the architecture magazine online. They called it a sinuous flowing form. And it looks gorgeous, and it will be. But that kind of architecture comes with a price tag. It's from an engineering, architectural, construction perspective, it's not cheap to build a building like that. How do you crunch the numbers?
Well, absolutely, yeah. I mean, it is costly to develop something like that. But of course, you know, if you're doing something with a brand like Bugatti, a brand that's existed and dominated the automotive industry for over a century, there's no cutting corners. So one,
well, there are no corners.
Exactly. nice pun. So the idea is, you know, we're creating something that's by all means incomparable. And, you know, that this is the hot topic in Dubai real estate right now. You know, people, wealthy people from all over the world are looking to move to Dubai, are looking to buy real estate in Dubai for many purposes, to settle in, to invest in. And more of those people are looking for different ways to stand out. A lot of them are looking for trophy assets. And for us specifically, you know, we wanted to create something that was very unique and very in par with our mission and vision at Bingatti, which is to always defy the incomparable and redefine the rules of the game in real estate. So we were very specific in working with a brand that hasn't done this before. So it's the first appearance for Bugatti in the world of real estate. And of course, you know, going back to what you were discussing now, developing something like this comes at a very significant cost. But of course, you know, the pricing strategy, the vertical integration at Bingatti, which entails a lot of in-house activities such as, you know, our own manufacturing facilities for aluminum, joinery, you name it, it's all done in-house. And that helps us in maintaining cost, quality and time.
And I mean, two of the, I don't know whether you call them penthouses or mansions, whatever your phrases are, have elevators that will take your car, probably a Bugatti, up to your apartment on the 17th floor or whatever it may be.
Correct. The 46th floor. So around nine lucky clients will be able to ascend in the car lifts with their cars all the way up to nine of the sky mansions in the project.
And then park your car. Okay. This is not going to be cheap, is it, to buy? What can you tell us about the pricing to buy one of these things?
So for the specific ones you mentioned just now, the sky mansion, the one on top, that's being priced at 750 million dirhams.
Hang on, Brandy Scott, did you hear what he just said?
He said a lot of zeros, didn't he?
750 million dirhams.
Correct.
What's our current record for a penthouse?
420. There was one on the Bulgari island, Jimura Bay, whatever. Bulgari residences, 420.
Does this come with a car? Or two? Or three?
Do you get a car? Do you get the watch?
Well, you get spectacular real estate. And, you know, I think it's worth reminding here of Ettore's other motto, which is nothing is too good, nothing is too expensive.
And there's, you know, we're getting used to this world here, aren't we, Brandy, in Dubai, of just having people with extraordinary wealth and multi-billionaires coming into this city.
Do you already have inquiries for this?
Oh, absolutely. We have many inquiries. You know, our lines haven't stopped ringing ever since we've gone live with the project. And the idea is, you know, the rationale behind the project, the design philosophy, it's very much in par with Bugatti's brand DNA. Each and every unit in this project is a mansion. So there are no apartments. Even the entry-level unit is a mansion.
What's the floor square foot?
So the smallest mansion is 2,000 square feet. And then it goes all the way up to 44,000 square feet for the one on top.
Who's inquiring?
That's a good question. So high net worth individuals from all across the world. A lot of clients coming in from Russia. A lot of clients calling from China. And pretty much a lot of international demand for this product.
What can you tell us about how much it's going to cost to build? Because construction costs are going up. We know we're living in an era of inflation. Steel prices are going up. Construction costs are going up.
Correct. So, you know, on a project like this, it's not really a cost-driven exercise because, you know, working with world-class brands such as Bugatti, the pursuit of perfection is the main driver for the project. So we've really approached this from a brand-oriented perspective. And that, again, goes back to our vision at Bignati. You know, I always refer to Bignati being a brand more than a real estate developer. So for us, cost has been a very secondary, if not tertiary, topic. And for
come
us,
on, you're the CEO. Cost can't be secondary and tertiary.
Well, when you do it right, I always believe when you do it right, when you build something right, it'll always sell.
Can we ask about the payment plan on that?
Yes, you can. So the down payment is 20%, and then it's fixed payments of 5%, running all the way till 80%, and then a 20% payment on completion.
You're not going to get a mortgage from Rack Bank, are you, for that? 750 million. We've got people writing in. Naveen has written in 750 million. I will never forget this number till my last breath. Someone else has written in, you could set up a bank with that money. Never mind borrow from the bank. You could set up a bank. Mohammed, can you stick around? We're getting lots of questions in.
Sure.
Because I'd like to talk to you not just about this development, which is great, but other things as well, because you've also done a lot of work in what I would call the affordable space. Drive past Silicon Oasis, for example, see sure. loads of your apartment blocks where, I mean, a completely different level. And also about, you know, some of your other businesses. You sold a drinks company.
Correct.
For about $250 million, but not that long ago.
Yes.
So there's lots to talk about. Can you stick around?
Sure thing.
Our guest this morning is Mohammed Bignati. He's the CEO of Bignati. Get your comments and questions coming in. Abdul Salam says, can I pay by credit card?
Well, if you have the money, absolutely.
You'd get a lot of miles, wouldn't you? That would be good. It's not often we get shocked and stunned on The Business Breakfast, is it, Brandy Scott?
No, and this by one number. Do you want to repeat it?
So, Mohammed has launched this week a new, let's call it a tower, in Business Bay downtown. It's a collab with Bugatti, the luxury car brand. And I'm going to let you say the number, Mohammed. How much is the most expensive apartment?
750 million dirhams.
750 million dirhams. And the phone is ringing off the hook for it.
What's the entry level?
Entry level, well, it's quite interesting. It's inspired or pays homage to the founding year of Bugatti. So it's 19.09 million dirhams.
Nice. I get that. Okay, there's a lot of rich people here in Dubai at the moment. Let's talk about other parts of... No. Let's talk about what you get for that 750 million. Brandy, you're keen to know, aren't you?
Yeah, and we are... I mean, we are getting so many questions and comments. As Rich said, people calculating the daily rent, 102,000 annually, 37 million.
At
don't complain about your rent rise.
It's a 5% yield. Exactly. Darira, get involved there. So,
what do you get, Mohammed, for that money?
Well, obviously, you know, the first thing is it's a piece unique. You know, it's the only Bugatti Sky Mansion that's, you know, exists in the world. And you get a car lift that takes your car up to your apartment. You can park it in your living room and, you know, show it off in front of your friends. You get a private pool, private gymnasium, private theater, a room for your bodyguard, a room for, you know, everyone else who works for you. You get your private office, pretty much all the perks under the sun.
And so you must have researched, joking apart, that what someone at that level will need, because you're talking clearly about a multi-billionaire. Things like facilities for bodyguards and security, you've clearly thought about not just it being luxury and beautiful, and I'm sure it will be, but the practicalities of life as a billionaire.
Absolutely, Richard. I mean, the entire project revolves around this notion. Again, you know, the lifestyle we were trying to create or emulate here is one that is very incomparable. And the idea was to bring this very exotic lifestyle inspired from the French Riviera and plant it into the heart of the metropolis. And this is something that seldom do you find in the metropolitan or cosmopolitan milieu of downtown Dubai.
But why do it in the downtown area rather than by the beach? One of our top stories this morning, Sheikh Mohammed's announcement yesterday, you'd have seen it. What does he want to do with beachfront, Brandy?
Build an awful lot more of it.
Why not beachfront?
That's a very good question. So generally you find that, you know, when there's demand for Uber luxury product in Dubai, there's two sort of experiences, very different ones. So there's the demand for luxury in the metropolis, let's say, so in the heart of the city, everyone wants to be near Dubai Mall and Burj Khalifa. And then there's the other type of luxury, which is more exotic, let's say, which is a beachfront. And there I would say areas like the Palm or Jumeirah Bay would be, you know, would serve the purpose. So we wanted to cater for the audience that wanted to be in the heart of the city, but also wanted the lifestyle of a resort or of the French Riviera. And so the size of...
How do you create the French Riviera in Business Bay?
That's a very good question. So it's a technical question. And I think what helped us with this project was the size of the plot. So we were fortunate enough to have a plot with a very wide frontage, which is very rare in an area like Business Bay. Again, it's a very cosmopolitan environment. So many of the plots in that area, from an architectural perspective or urban planning perspective, are quite narrow and high-rise oriented. This one was very wide, and that allowed us to create a Riviera-inspired beach within the project.
For this kind of money, how much say does the buyer get in what it's going to look like? And I'm not just talking about I'll have the light wood as opposed to the dark wood. I'm talking about, you know, the actual layout, how many rooms it's got. How much can they get in there and actually design it?
So in terms of bedrooms, you're talking 7 bedrooms, and it's flexible. You know, we're giving them the option to design it however they like, if they wanted it to be custom or piece unique. The layout we've done, I like to think, is a very thoughtful one, very nice one. But yeah, it's pretty much you can get whatever you like in terms of a layout if you buy this.
Someone's written in, how much of the service charge is going to be?
So the service charges are at 40 dirhams per square foot.
Okay, fine. We can do the maths. Mohammed, just before we let you go, we've got a couple more minutes with you. At Bingati, over the past few years, you've really built this real estate business. And some of what you do is luxury, but a lot of what you do is far more affordable. And I touched on this earlier, drive past Silicon Oasis. We see a lot of your buildings and your signature orange and white frontage that you've developed. And these are apartments that are renting for, what, you know, 50 to 100,000 dirhams a year, I would guess, yeah?
Correct.
Is that business still ongoing? Are you still involved in that sector?
Absolutely, absolutely, Richard. So we like to cater to all segments in the market. I almost like to sort of remember the business model of a great brand such as Emirates Airlines. So, you know, you have all the classes, economy class, economy premium, business, first, and then you can sometimes even get a private jet these days. And so it's very similar, synonymous in the real estate sector. So we're catering to all the segments, and the demand is there for the brand and for the product that we're doing.
And you've decided to bring most of the services in-house. Often developers like you, you'll come up with a concept, but then you'll hire an architect, then you'll hire an engineering firm or a construction firm. But you're, to use a MBA phrase, vertically integrated. Most of this stuff is done in-house, is that right?
Correct, correct. And we've adopted that strategy mainly to control three aspects, three main pillars in the business: quality, time, and cost. And it's been a great success story for us. It's sort of given us our competitive edge, and it's been our unique selling point because, you know, what we do as a developer is very unconventional. The architectural style, the geometry that we use, the materials, and this requires a very specific skill set. It requires a very specific design team and people who are actually manufacturing this.
So are you using a trophy architecture firm? I know, for example, another building in Business Bay was designed by Zaha Hadid, which looks spectacular. Have you gone with a trophy architecture firm?
So for our projects, we have in-house design teams, very large teams. And for the structure, yes, we are in talks with actually at the moment 3 trophy firms that I cannot disclose right now, but we are in talks with them.
Okay, well, I'll tell you who you're not in talks with. You're not in talks with me about buying a 750 million dirham apartment, much as I'd love to be one of those people phoning you up. Don't wait for your phone to ring today, because it's not happening for me or Brandy. But Mohammed, thanks for joining us today and for being candid. We like people who talk figures on the Business Breakfast, so we
Pleasure.
Appreciate you revealing that.
Pleasure.
Mohammed Bingati of Bingati Holdings, if you just tuned in, a collab with Bugatti, the car company, new apartment building, let me call it that, in Business Bay. The flagship apartment is 750 million dirhams. Mohammed, shukran jazilan.
Thank you, Richard.
Right then.
Catch up on the business headlines with the Bite-Sized Business Breakfast,
where we are discussing Beachonomics. I Air Dubai's got big plans to add more than 80 kilometres of public beachfront to the Emirate, lengthening those beaches by 400%. To discuss the big picture economically, we have Tamer Khan, who is the head of research at CBRE. Tamer, good morning. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
I know Georgia Tolley, a little bit later on the agenda, is going to be talking about community building. She's going to be talking about the environment. But we want to talk money here on the Business Breakfast. What can beachfront add to an economy? How do we even start measuring that?
I think it's difficult, but we're starting to get the details. But I think it add quite a lot, both from a pure dirham perspective, but also from a softer perspective as well. So this is around 54 kilometres worth of new beachfront development across Dubai to improve the city's livability, which is part of its 2040 plan, around a 400% increase in the beachfront. And we're about 21 kilometres right now. So this 54, gets us a lot closer to the goal, which is around over 100 kilometres of beachfront space. And we can see, where this has come in, how it improves certain areas. Kite Beach is a great example of this, where you have all these amenities, but you also have the beaches as well where you can go for free.
So let's break this down into different areas. Let's start, given the conversation we've just been having, with real estate. What will this mean for the real estate market?
I think it's certainly positive. We are getting to a stage where beachfront available beachfront plots are incredibly limited within the market, and the demand for them is very, very significant. So this will provide new development opportunities. These developments happening right across the city. So you're looking towards sort of Dubai Islands, where we're seeing beachfront being brought in, but also the Palm Jebel Ali as well. So it gives a lot of opportunity for a number of different developers across different sectors, whether you're looking at hospitality or real estate, branded residential development, these types of projects.
And we are talking public beaches as well. We're talking free beaches, as you mentioned. What does that mean for tourism diversification?
I think it's very important because, first of all, it's more than just beaches as well. It's actually sort of greening and rewilding certain parts of the city. Those beaches will increase Dubai's sort of marketability. These are very key points in certain sort of livability indexes that you see around the world. You look at the infrastructure, you look at the environment as well, and this will continue to help Dubai sort of in its upward march up those rankings.
I was looking at a study that was trying to put a cost on, or rather a value on beachfront and what it added to an economy, and it was based on Airbnbs. Is there a possibility that people who already own property could benefit from this?
I think certainly, because it'll give people more options. So if you're in a close vicinity of an Airbnb and you have the ability to go to these beaches, that the individuals, the tourist that comes in would want to stay at these locations, and they could actually then justify higher rates as well.
You mentioned there what it actually means for livability. So it's not just tourism, it's also residents. Talk to me about how this fits into Dubai's larger population play.
First of all, Dubai's grown. The population has grown over the last, 10 years, and then multiple folds over the last 20 years and so on. The Dubai's goal and the leadership's goal is to make it, the happiest city in the world, one of the most livable cities in the world. This helps with that because it provides, running tracks. It provides sort of that public realm, which is really important to give people something to do within the city to improve our quality of life in a softer manner as well.
There's also quite a big emphasis on services. They want to increase the amount of services on our public beachfronts by 300%. What opportunities could that bring in for local businesses?
I think across the board, whether you're an entrepreneur, that this provides sort of quite significant opportunities. It could be smaller. You provide sort of juice shacks to ice cream trucks and these different types of things. I think it's very, very significant. And you have these sort of core elements where you've seen, for example, in JBR, quite significant investments from a number of different development and F&B firms, and then you have smaller traders who set up alongside that. So that economy, growing it from top to bottom will be very, very significant opportunities for a number of people.
What do we still need to know? We've got a certain amount of detail. What do you want to hear next?
I think we'll need a good idea on the phasing of this. I think the details are sort of slowly coming in terms of we're actually expecting that MAMSAR will start its development in June of this year. So, you know, exactly what's coming in, what are the opportunities as well. I'm sure we have a number of developer clients at CBRE who would love to know where, you know, the next beachfront go-to location will be.
Speaking of development, we can't let you go without asking you the 750 million dirham question, as we did hear from Mohammed bin Ghati speaking to us about his new building, and that is the price of the penthouse. As someone in the real estate research industry, what do you make of that?
I think it's certainly obviously a very, very incredibly high price. But the reality is that the demand from the ultra high net worth community is very, very strong right now. And if you cater the right product, I think that you'll certainly, and I think Mohammed has certainly probably already has a number of interested parties for that particular project.
Is there a top? Is there a peak of what we can ask?
I think, look, certainly there will be, but we're seeing that Dubai is becoming so competitive globally, and you know, if you, it's still on, you know, if you compare what average prices on that sort of top 1% of the market are within Dubai compared to say London or New York, we're actually still a lot cheaper, and actually ownership costs are a lot cheaper as well in terms of sort of taxes and so on. So, look, there is a top. I think, you know, people will look at it relatively, but I think there's still some way to go in certain parts of the market.
Tamer Khan is head of research at the Real Estate Advisory, CBRE, speaking to us this morning about free public beaches and 750 million dirham apartments.
Just the highlights. This is the Bite-Sized Business Breakfast.
Talking energy now, because a new survey from the International Energy Agency says clean energy investments have received a significant boost this year. In fact, they have overtaken investment in fossil fuel infrastructure. Joining us on the line now is Robin Mills, the CEO of Camar Energy here in the UAE. Morning, Robin.
Hi, good morning, everyone.
So just what did we learn from this new report?
Well, it's an interesting one. I think I took a few things away from it. Firstly, I suppose over the decade up to the pandemic, clean energy spending worldwide had been basically flat, somewhere around $1.2 trillion every year. Whereas, you know, we really need to see clean energy spending accelerating, of course, to meet our climate challenge. And then from 2020, 21 and onwards, we've seen really a rapid acceleration in clean energy spending. At the same time, spending on fossil fuels collapsed during the pandemic. It's come back a bit, but hasn't even reached the pre-pandemic levels. If you go back a few years, clean energy spending was about equal to fossil fuels. Now a lot more is going on clean energy every year.
And we've had warnings from various people that this lack of investment in fossil fuels is very worrying for 2 or 3 billion people in the planet who struggle with access to energy, particularly in Asia, particularly in India. We've had the Indian energy minister saying we need more investment in fossil fuels because that's what pays for the cooking and the heating and the transportation for hundreds of millions of people. Similarly in Africa as well. And we've had that warning repeated this week by Sultan Al Jaber from the UAE speaking at a conference in Doha. How concerned should we be about this reduction in investment in fossil fuels?
Well, I think it depends where the investment is going, right? And investment in coal has now fallen at pretty low levels, and that's what we need to see. You know, coal is a very dirty fuel. But there are concerns, particularly of supply of gas, you know, which is a much cleaner fuel and a good way of replacing coal. Is that enough over the next few years? And there's this big debate, you know, okay, are we investing in fossil fuels? Are we investing in cleaner ways of using fossil fuels? And is that investment enough? And this absolutely is a concern over the next few years, particularly in this kind of transition period that we're in. And there's a real effort to stress this is a transition. It's not about switching off fossil fuels. It's about gradually transitioning that into these cleaner forms of energy.
We've got comments from Fatih Birol from the International Energy Agency. He's a regular visitor to this part of the world. And he says, one shining example of investment in clean energy is solar, which is set to overtake the amount going into oil production for the first time. I mean, that just seems, that would have been unimaginable Robin, when we started talking first on the Business Breakfast 15 years ago, more money going into solar than oil. But it's happening.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, not just 15 years ago, it would have been unimaginable 5 years ago. And that is a measure of just how rapid progress has been on solar power in particular. And also what a turning point the, first of all, the pandemic and then the war in Ukraine have been, and about thinking about clean energy worldwide and about spending on it.
Now, in terms of fossil fuels, and you touched on this earlier, talking about coal being a dirty fuel and gas being a relatively cleaner fuel, not all fossil fuels are created equal. Which ones should we be investing in?
Well, you know, I think there's a big debate going on at the moment, and we'll see this at the COP28 climate conference in Dubai later in the year. You know, so there are some who would say, well, we should not spend on fossil fuels at all. There are some who say, you know, fossil fuels are important and we should spend on cleaner forms of them, and particularly with carbon capture and storage, which is a way of using fossil fuels without contributing to global warming. And I think that's very much the stress that the UAE and other Gulf countries would put on it. Nothing wrong with fossil fuels themselves. It's the emissions of carbon dioxide that are the big problem.
We had Sultan Al-Jaber speaking this week, talking about Africa being, in particular, huge potential for fossil fuels. You've got rivers for hydroelectric power. You've got lots of windy areas. You can put up wind farms there. And, of course, many parts of Africa have a lot of sunshine as well. He said enormous potential for renewable energy there. What do you see?
Africa has absolutely enormous potential for all kind of renewable energy, as you say. It also has very large gas reserves, and those gas reserves can be used to bring the domestic industry and grow the African economy, as well as export to other countries and bring in government revenues that way. So it's very important to develop all these forms of energy in Africa. You know, unfortunately, there's a lot of moves to kind of prevent financing to Africa for gas projects, which it needs very much. And we also see that there's just not nearly enough money getting to Africa for whether for renewable energy or for fossil fuel projects. We've seen over the last year, you know, the amount of renewable energy installed in Africa is equal to the amount in the Netherlands, which is, you know, is one small and not very sunny country in Europe. So it really just shows that too much funding is going to developed countries, but there isn't the right balance between what goes to some developed countries and what goes to African countries in particular.
Finally, Robin, talking of investment in energy, can't ignore the ADNOC Logistics and Services IPO. We learned yesterday there's a lot of money going into that. 163 times oversubscribed. Extraordinary. And now this is part of the Abu Dhabi National Oil Company, and essentially it's an investment in the hydrocarbon industry by the back door. They provide the ships and other services for companies like ADNOC. What do you make of that massive oversubscription in the ADNOC Logistics IPO?
Yeah, well, you know, all the IPOs that ADNOC has carried out, it's IPO'd several units, such like ADNOC Drilling, ADNOC Gas and others, ADNOC Logistics and Shipping, as you say, the next one. They're all oversubscribed, and ADNOC LNS even more than the others. There's great appetite for them, a lot of money around in the UAE and the Gulf, a lot of interest in these companies. They're seen as good, safe investments. They pay good dividends. And there is appetite to, as you say, get some exposure to the hydrocarbon sector in some way, even if not directly.
Robin, always good to talk to you. Appreciate you getting up early this morning to speak to us. That is the voice of Robin Mills. He's the CEO of Camar Energy. It's a consultancy based here in Dubai.
You've been listening to a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast. To enjoy lots more from Dubai Eye in the United Arab Emirates, just go to dubaieye1038.com or find them wherever you normally get your podcasts.